Blog Talk Radio. Today is Monday, January 12, 2014, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Monday and Happy New Year to you once again. It is already day 12. Can you believe it? How are those resolutions coming along? Are you sticking to your plans and your goals? Rolling out that dream as you had hoped? Taking steps to maneuver toward and manifest your purpose? I certainly hope so. In fact, I hope that all of your plans and goals and dreams come into fruition this year. I hope your diligence and commitment to make things happen pays off big, 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 big. I hope you stay on the winning track this year and in the years to come. I do wish that for you. I do. And you know what else I hope? Yep, I hope that we can bring our societal issues to come in order. I hope we can work together to find solutions to our problems and some peaceful progress in the process as well. And I believe it can happen. I believe it with my whole heart. Today I have the distinct privilege to talk with my special guest, Mr. Dennis Jones, who has spent his entire career committed to the process of law and order and is now applying his lifetime of skills and expertise as Executive Director of Metro New York Concerns of Police Survivors. He is a retired, highly successful 25-year NYPD law enforcement detective with increasingly responsible positions and extensive cross-level police experience. He has a keen knowledge of disaster preparedness, intelligence gathering, security operations, criminal investigations, internal investigations, public affairs, urban patrol, undercover work, and coordination of programs and planned actions as well. And urban patrol experience gained through patrol assignments in major high crime districts. In addition to that, he's successful in promoting crime prevention and community education programs in order to complement traditional law enforcement activities. And two, he has a focus on community policing consistently demonstrated by the ability to mediate and build community cohesion. He's a results-oriented professional with a wealth of knowledge and a proven ability to motivate culturally diverse and success-driven teams of highly qualified personnel. He's an innovative thinker with a background in new program development and implementation. He has specialties in government law enforcement liaisons, community affairs, confidential assistant, internal investigations, and as an intelligence officer. And if you think I may not have picked the right person for this, I bet you're thinking again. He's the guy for the conversation. And it is truly my privilege to welcome Mr. Jones as special guest today. Good afternoon, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon, Silver Ray. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and I tell you, it truly is a privilege to have you with me today. I wanted to get all of that out, and I imagine that's only a portion, a snapshot of all that you really have done and do, but I did want to make sure I put that that information out, to let them know that you are somebody who will be able to provide some insight and information today on some very highly sensitive issues that have been in news in recent events and that are of large concern to many of us who are the onlookers, wanting to have some new perspectives, perhaps some greater insight on how we are to digest some of that and how to maybe any of us can help even move forward some of the things that are ahead for us in the future. Before we do that, why don't you just enlighten us a little bit? I want to talk about your organization a little bit more a little later in the conversation. But it sounds like you always thought you were going to be in law enforcement. How far back do you go, and what was that dream like for you when you got started?
Well, I could tell you, it really didn't start out that way. I was actually really, when I was a little child, I thought about law enforcement. You watch it on TV, and you start to dream yourself and play cops and robbers with your friends and your brothers and sisters. But then I turned into medicine, and I really thought that that was my forte and where I wanted to go. And before I even went into the academy, I was actually working in a hospital as a technician and drawing blood every day. But amazingly, once this happened, once I got into the police academy and I saw the family of the NYPD that I was going to be involved with, it really took hold of me, and it was really something that changed my life.
And the rest is history, as they say.
The rest is history, yes.
Well, you have quite an extensive background, history, experience, and skills. So I would be safe in saying I think you've probably seen it all and been a part of it all.
Well, the one thing about being in the NYPD, New York is a very busy place, and you do get to see it all. There's not too much that an average police officer doesn't get to see, and those that are in specialized units get to see a lot more. So it really is an eye-opener and a gathering of information that will last with you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jones, what was it like for you when you were out policing the streets? Have things changed real considerably? As you said, New York's always been a pretty heavy-duty place when it comes to having to manage crime. But what was it like as a new officer out there compared to what things are now?
Well, I could tell you, when I first started, I started in the areas of Bedford-Stuyvesant, and also worked a few months in the areas of Park Slope and up on the side of that side of town and the south side of Brooklyn. But it actually, we had more of interactions with the community. The community policing model came through the time that I came into the NYPD in the 80s and in the 90s. And it really was an opportunity for us to get to know where we were working and who we were working with and the community that we were working for. So there was a lot more interaction with the community that is not taking place now. Now you see more of, we went through after that period of law enforcement, period of strategies of enforcement in the Giuliani time, and it became a scenario of getting numbers as it peaked right out of that time. So policing has changed in New York, and really the interaction of police and the community has changed, and it is more of a chasm that is grown wider than it should have.
Mm-hmm. It's obviously a challenge there, as it is in many other communities throughout the country. And there, of course, I think, so many things are very obvious to us, again, as we look at the news and we weigh the things we see and we make our judgments and all of that. But I guess I do know and want to say that, of course, if we did not have an incredible law enforcement across the country, if we had to think about what the that would be like, it would be much more chaos and destruction than any of us could ever imagine. So I think it's important for us to realize that there is a great majority of the law enforcement entities across the country that are diligently working on our behalf to help keep this country and people safe. But with that being said, we know that there are also many things that have happened that we do look at and we feel are injustices and definitely unfair and, you know, hurtful and a lot of other emotional things that we have to deal with as we are onlookers. And I know you have more insight about what I just described. I think it's important that we have a real intelligent perspective given back to us. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you today. So I'd just like for you to share, without me asking a whole lot of questions about it, I'll interject some, but I'd like to know your perspective on things. You know, you've had some very unfortunate recent events in New York. You know, I'm sure, much about all the other things that are going on that are high-profile issues. I'd just like for you to share some of your thoughts about those things and how they're impacting citizens across the country.
Well, I think that word that you were looking for is anarchy, and without the professional police departments that we have across the country and really around the world, we would have that. The NYPD, I'd have to say, is one of the top police departments in the world, and a lot of police departments seek out their knowledge and their training from the NYPD, and just saying that just tends to believe that most of our police departments, if not all of the police departments across the country, are doing the right thing. The police officers going into this for the right reasons, and then pretty much in anything, as in every area of the world, there is bad apples. Once those bad apples raise their head, they cause this confusion. When you have a professional department going through their communities, interacting, making their arrest, doing the things as professional as ever, communicating with the community, you don't have this disturbance. But when you have unprofessionalism in aspects of arrest, of communication, of how you deal with the community, of prosecution, all of these things tend to rub the community, and it's not just a black and white issue, it's rub the community the wrong way. And when you have that, toes are going to get stepped on, and you're going to get this type of disturbance that is going around the country right now. So I would look to think that we have to have a better, we have to do the things that we know to do. I mean, we're a professional organization. The law enforcement is professional in their training and in their knowledge of the law and the things in that nature. Do the things that you know to do that are the most professional way of carrying yourself, and that will prove in the long run to be the right steps in solving this problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you're right, and when I listen to what you just said, and knowing some police officers, and you know, they lead lives just like everybody else. They have families and their houses, and do the things at school, and you know, just like every other husband, wife, and family do. And I don't think we should forget that in the perspective of what you just shared. However, again, I want to ask you about what you just explained about the bad apples. Since you, as you are so knowledgeable in the background of police officers getting hired and what they do once they're on staff and all of that, is there anything being done differently now that's or in strategy to determine who's a good fit for this? When you use the word professional, I get that. I know what that means. I know the great pride there is in being in that position and all of that. So is there anything being done now to try to determine if people really are not a good fit for that, if there's a way to be able to counter it before someone is actually out on the street having to interact with the public?
Well, I don't think that at this point we're finding that these bad police officers are born that way, and finding them prior to them coming on the job is not necessarily a difficult task. But there is a painstaking way that each department weeds out during their application time and their interview time and all of that before they get a person on the police department. So when you're talking about finding the guy that doesn't fit, that happens. But then what happens is cultural changes take place and changes in habits take place during your time in the department, and you could actually become a bad officer very easily by, you know, submitting to things that maybe were inherent in your home, but the fact that when you took on a job, you wanted to be professional, and you started out being professional, but then you started to leave things out, and you started to get a little bit laxed on how professional and how you're going to treat people and how you're going to talk to people, and that's when you get a bad police officer. So not necessarily is it that it's from the beginning stages. You know, these guys are some of the best and the brightest, and they're chosen to do these particular jobs, and the fact that you might get a bad apple doesn't necessarily mean it started out that way.
Yeah, I certainly understand that better now. I wonder, though, when I think of the issues and the emotions and all of the makeup that goes into being an officer every day, especially when you know that there is potential to encounter disaster or death or anything like that. That has to be a pretty difficult thing to have to deal with on a daily basis. Are there trainings and things like that in place that help the officers with dealing with those types of fears or anxieties?
Yes, we do. In all police departments, especially in our big departments here in New York, they have these peer support groups and training, and they have things that would help officers to experience the stress-related issues that they deal with every day. Unfortunately, you know, in the case of our two NYPD officers, Lou and Ramos, that were killed in the line of duty, that brings reality to a position that you took when you were sworn in. You hear about it, you may watch it in the news, but when it becomes face forward in front of you and it's in your watch, under your watch while you're in the police department, it tends to come home a little bit closer, and then you start to feel like, yes, this is a serious job, it's a dangerous job, and I have to be more professional every day and learn to be better at what I do every day. Those that do that will continue to be good cops. Then you have ones that'll take this as an offensive, and they'll use it to become bitter at the policing that they're doing. So psychologically, there's a lot of things that need to take place with all of the officers that were involved or connected to these two officers. As our organization does it with the families, these coworkers, these cops that worked with these officers, they need to know that these things do happen, and you have to now de-stress yourself. You have to now have an outlet, a way to change how you feel about this particular situation and your job as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that is a real challenge in itself, and some daily work that has to be done on each officer's individual attitude about that. I want to ask you about the community. I want to ask you about how we need to work with how we feel. When I think about all of this, I'm just, you know, I find myself holding back tears. There's families being destroyed on both sides of that problem. When you just mentioned the officers, and it's happening in a lot of places. There's two sides to it. You know, there's your, you know, the law enforcement side, sad, sad, sad. And then there's the unfortunate side of people who are committing crimes against them. That's also very, very sad. And we're talking about a lot of very complex issues and problems when we look at it, and it's heartbreaking. The community feels picked upon. The community feels targeted. The community feels somewhat or obviously in some places like retaliating, and it's negative. What are your responses to that as an expert in this field? What do you say to us to help us? The average one may not have as many things in place to seek out as resources for help. All that's there and available is to create unity and affront and a fight back. And I mean that on a professional approach. But what would you say as an expert? If you were the one that was standing in front of everybody, what would you say?
I'd really have to say that, you know, speaking to the community, because I do that on a regular basis also, in an organization called the Law Enforcement Alliance, and our objective is to try to bridge the gap that we know does exist between law enforcement and community. Community doesn't understand the processes that the law enforcement have to go through every day when they put that uniform on, when they do this job, and when they want to go home. A lot of that gets slipped through the cracks. So in our task of trying to explain a lot more things, expel a lot more ideas that may be swirling around in the community, we really want to get the community to the understanding of how a police officer has to now go. He's a community member himself, and now he has to go and put on a badge and a shield and become that entity from which they're the separation between what's right and what's wrong in the community. So it's very hard for the community to grasp that, and it's only from getting them to take things in when they're in a calm state. You're not going to get that happening when people are riled up and people are excited and agitated. So we know we're going to lose a few. You're going to lose a few to that. But somewhere along the line, the help has to come to those calmer parts of the community. Our clergy has to do a lot of work. Our community leaders have to do a lot of work. That's what a community is. It's not going to take one entity. It's not going to take the police department. It's not going to take the mayor. It's not going to take, you know, your town leader. It's going to take a collective of all of that together to get the community onto a page where they can actually really receive what you're trying to get them to understand. It's going to take a while, but we have to be purposed in trying to make that happen, and that's from the law enforcement side and the community side. Everybody has to take a step back, calm the situation down as it is today, and then come up with constructive ways of making sure that we get to the table and have the discussion, the calm discussion that is definitely needed. Can't do it by just ignoring. We can't do it by shouting. Has to be a purpose, a desire from every end of this to make it happen by going to the table and talking about it and discussing it and letting tensions, you know, be laid to the wayside.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for sure. It comes to mind something that you said earlier in the conversation about when you were first out as an officer. And I remember, too, growing up, there wasn't that type of intimidation and fear necessarily when you interacted with an officer or you saw one. And it comes to mind, you know, maybe it's more simple than we're even thinking, Mr. Jones. Maybe it's more simple. Maybe we go back to the simple place where instead of always creating a intimidating presence, that maybe there's something that the officers, and I mean this nationwide, can figure out to do to be more interactive in the communities. And when I say that, I think of all these pictures that I see. You'll see an officer hugging somebody, or he bought somebody some food that was stealing some, or something like that. Those are all really good deeds, but can you imagine what could happen if you were to get interactive and establishing some community softball teams or basketball teams or any kind of, you know, recreational types of activities where there is an opportunity to build a relationship and trust. And, you know, that's just one thing. But I believe that it, I think maybe we're making it more complicated. If your husband and wife are having an argument, you know, they're going to go probably with the simplest thing first. If the marriage is in jeopardy, then yeah. But I don't really think that the marriage between the community and the law enforcement community is in jeopardy in the sense of it can't be fixed. There's not going to be a real divorce. But I think that if you can figure out some key things where things, the simple things that really work between people that establish trust. I remember seeing the picture of the little boy crying in the police officer's arms. It's not as destroyed as we want to believe. Again, you know, some of that gets sensationalized, but I think if we go for the simple strategies, making yourself present in more positive ways, then the levels of trust will come. They'll increase. And then the opportunity, too, to have something be fun and engaging and empowering at the same time, I think, is a really great way to go.
And those things do happen. They happen in certain places, and some police departments do have those types of activities, but not enough. And I agree with you. Those are the things that probably will help us to smoothen this over maybe sooner than later. It's a better look when the community is not afraid of the police department. It's a better look when the police department is not apprehensive to engage with the community. And that's when you're going to have the cohesiveness that you're looking for between the community and the police.
Yes, and I certainly do believe it can happen. I believe it will happen. I think if we have more innovative thinkers like you, people who care like you, and I hear it in you that you really do, that we'll be on our way to the winning side of it. I know I wake up in the morning sometimes lately and think, what is going to happen? What's the next thing that can happen? You know, things are getting so unusually challenging in daily life, but then you know, I reel myself back in and I think, you know what, there are solutions. We're people who all really want the same things out of life. And if we can really stop, you said a key thing, if we can reel ourselves in and calm down and really start focusing on what strategies look like, that always works. It always works if everybody can come to the table and come to agreement on it and then execute it. It always works. I want to thank you very much for being my guest today. You're an extraordinary gentleman, and it really has been a privilege to have you take this time to talk to me today.
No problem. I appreciate that opportunity.
Well, I want to thank all of you as well for tuning in today. I wanted to help do my part to shed a little light and interest in the topic of some of the events that are going on in law enforcement and some of the challenging things that we are facing on a daily basis. You know, it's always my plan to try to bring some insight, enlightenment, and education wherever I can, and I hope that this was helpful. Do your part to bring that calm and order. If you've got ideas, share them with your police department. Write a letter to the president. I did that. Shared my little 2 cents for whatever it's worth, but you just never know. We are the citizens of these United States, and our thoughts and our concerns do matter. So do what you can to help make this a better place to live for all of us. Thanks again for listening. Please share with your friends that Foxology Today is on Mondays. I'm going to a new time starting next week, 7:30 p.m. on Monday nights, and I'd love to have you continue listening. That being said, have yourself an amazing day. I'm going to look forward to talking with you next time.